Hare Krishna. I'm going to speak on the attractiveness and appeal of Srila Prabhupada. What is it about Srila Prabhupada that brings devotees together today all over the world? Actually, it'll be tomorrow in some parts of the world. To glorify Srila Prabhupada. It is a function which is formalized, but as we've seen from the sincere appreciations of Srila Prabhupada, it's not just a formality. I did recently, actually, earlier this year, attend the function of the Vyasa Puja of one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers in Puri, in India, in the spiritual world. And I was struck by how formal it was. I didn't feel the feeling that I felt when devotees are glorifying Srila Prabhupada. So what's so special about Srila Prabhupada? This, what I have to speak, of course, that question, the answer to it could go on for hours, days, weeks, months, years, yugas. This, what I have to say here will take a few hours, but I plan to spread that over a few days. I came across a PhD thesis from a non-devotee scholar in which, as part of, he was analyzing ISKCON in the usual way that non-devotee scholars do. And he, one part of his presentation was analyzing this, how Srila Prabhupada appealed to his disciples. So I actually got some inspiration and a few quotes from there also. But obviously I'm going to present it in a different way to the way the scholar does, because he's not overtly offensive, but he analyzes Srila Prabhupada as an entomologist would a butterfly. It's just like, it's an object to be observed and analyzed and talked about just like anything else in the world, through the eyes of mundane psychology and sociology, anthropology, religious theories, and all this kind of nonsense. So he speaks about Srila Prabhupada's charisma, and he notes various things that disciples experienced with Srila Prabhupada, but he fails to note the essential fact that Srila Prabhupada transmitted genuine, tangible spiritual experience. Pratyakshagavamam dharmyam susukam kartamavyayam. This spiritual experience it's directly experienced. It's not like any other direct experience of this mundane world. It is that of the absolute reality. It is most blissful, and it's unending and unlimited. So it's not that Srila Prabhupada was charismatic in the way as Mrinda Prabhu has recently been using that example of Herr Hitler was a very charismatic person. But Srila Prabhupada's appeal was not to exploit people or mislead them, but to just the opposite, to save them from all exploitation and misleading. So obviously this is a vast subject. I'm just going to speak on just a few aspects of how Srila Prabhupada attracted others, appealed to others, touch the hearts of others, that Adbhuta Hari Prabhu just spoke about how Srila Prabhupada touched the heart. That's an English idiomatic saying. I made a note after hearing that Srila Prabhupada didn't touch our heart. He entered it. He filled it with direction and the meaning and the bliss of Krishna consciousness. So it's an English saying, so no harm in that, but it's inadequate to, as all words are, to explain what Srila Prabhupada gave. He said, so I'm just going to give a few glimpses. I don't plan, although I might do, I don't plan to speak about Srila Prabhupada's the book distribution. Manidhar Prabhu is here. He's much more competent to speak about that than I am. For all of us, we're all experiencing that the very fact that we are able to come in contact with Srila Prabhupada, the chance to meet Srila Prabhupada, is very rare and extremely fortunate. We how fortunate we are. This is stated by the sages at Naimisharanya. They spoke to Suta Goswami. There's a verse which is quoted in many Vyasa Puja offerings at the beginning of Bhagavatam. Tvang nasan darshito dhatra dustarang nistitir shatang kaling satvaharang pungsang karna dhara ivarnavam. We think that we have met your goodness by the will of providence, just so that we may accept you as captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being. So it's our great good fortune. Every devotee has their own experience of Srila Prabhupada, just as every person has their own experience of Krishna. So we'll I'll discuss some of these experiences that devotees have had. At the same time, we should inform our PhD scholar and remind ourselves also that it's not just a matter of acquiring information. Again, the same, like if you study butterflies enough, you can become an expert butterflyologist, or whatever they call them. Entomologist is the general term. It's just acquiring information doesn't mean that we can understand him or even get any of his mercy. In fact, it's amazing how some people, like this scholar, they study Prabhupada and they don't develop any love for him. They might develop some appreciation of him. Recently, some devotees got excited that this Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, who's a rascal, definitely Srila Prabhupada would class him among the rascals, rascal number ones. Or is it rascals number one? They're all competing to be number one. Although nowadays we're not supposed to say things like that. but he was appreciating Srila Prabhupada as an example of someone to give inspiration to people that even in old age you can do something significant. What an idiot. Rascal, that man is. As an example. So yeah, you can, yes, all you old people, you get up and do something significant, like make a flower garden in the locality or something. And, oh, Ravi Shankar, oh, that really proves that Prabhupada's great, because Sri Sri Ravi Shankar praised him. Anyway, here's a much better quote from SDG, Satsarup Das Goswami, who's been quoted quite a lot in this PhD thesis, as he's written more than anyone about Srila Prabhupada. So he wrote, "Mundane biographers would like to speculate and present their psychological theories on the life of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Why he waited, prepared himself, and then left for America with virtually no support or much chance for success." That Hopkins, you quoted him, he expressed that very eloquently. It didn't seem like the kind of model that you'd write up in a book, how to succeed in life. Wait till you're 70, go overseas with no money, no friends, no contacts. But how to succeed in life? Take full shelter of Krishna and the order of Guru. That's the point. And then impossible becomes possible. Hopkins didn't get that point. So, continuing. But the movement of persons completely surrendered to the Guru and Krishna cannot be understood by such speculative methods. It is a fact that the Absolute Truth, Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be known by material argument or sensual inspection, and similarly, the servant of the Absolute Truth can also never be known by any means except devotion. As Hayagriva put it in his book, The Hare Krishna Explosion, the more we acquire devotion to him, to Srila Prabhupada, the more his unique features and qualities manifest, and we come to see him as a purely transcendental personality. In the preface of that book, he put it succinctly, Prabhupada's real identity defied analysis. So you can analyze your butterflies and say it belongs to this species and this genus and this and that, but... And devotees can also be analyzed, as Rupa Goswami analyzes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So it gives us some idea. But, again quoting SDG, everything he ever did was unlimited. No one could understand the depths of Prabhupada's actions or his words. They are inconceivable, as Srila Prabhupada would often state, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Bigeha Nabhujai, that the activities and everything about the pure devotees cannot be understood simply by knowledge becoming learned. Purijan Prabhu writes, do not imagine that his dealings are based on superficialities, likes or dislikes. Dealings between guru and disciple are deep and are meant for the disciple's welfare. In addition, it is not possible for a disciple to understand the depth of consciousness that motivates his spiritual master's actions. So, in other words, a disciple should not attempt to read ordinary human intentions and motives behind the activities and the personality of the guru. In other words, he shouldn't subject him to psychological analysis. He should consider, we should always consider, as Srila Prabhupada wrote in a poem, feeling himself helpless, having come to America, that you have brought me, I'm like a puppet in your hands. Now, if you want me to dance, you have to make me dance. So that, Srila Prabhupada's, everything he did was inspired by Krishna because he was completely surrendered to Krishna. If we are to analyze Srila Prabhupada, we should do so in this transcendental way, understanding that he is a fully surrendered, pure devotee of Krishna, not ascribe mundane motives to him. Definitely, if we as the disciples can hardly begin to understand Srila Prabhupada, it's ambitious to the point of absurdity for these scholars, so-called scholars, to try to understand Prabhupada by bringing their different psychological theories and comparing it to this spread of religions, other religions. Oh, that's all. They're fumbling in the dark. Who is Srila Prabhupada? Well, that we know. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. He's the special representative of Krishna. Prithu Prabhu describes that one morning we were walking with Srila Prabhupada near the Eiffel Tower in Paris when Shivananda asked, "What about your internal life, Srila Prabhupada?" Prabhupada, obviously annoyed, replied sharply, "That you do not require." Somehow or other, Shivananda didn't get the message and dared to ask the same question again. "But Prabhupada, it would be interesting to know about your personal intimate relationship with Lord Krishna. It would be interesting." Srila Prabhupada stopped walking, turned to Shivananda, and angrily repeated, "That you do not require." Then he simply walked off. He was clearly displeased with our attempt to intrude into his inner life. That's the end of the quote from Prithu Prabhu. What do we know about Srila Prabhupada? We can conclude from his own teachings that Srila Prabhupada is a Shaktyaveshavata. Krishna himself comes into this world, yada yada hi dharmasya glanya bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. When there is a decline of religion, he comes into this world to re-establish it, and sometimes he sends his representatives to do the same thing and empowers them, and they may act even more powerfully than he himself. Just like Ramachandra Bhagavan is famous for building a bridge to Lanka with stones, but Hanuman jumped. So he seemed to be more than Lord Ram. Lord Ram couldn't find Sita. Hanuman found her. So he may empower the devotee to do more than he does, but it's understood that it's by Krishna's power. Once Srila Prabhupada was walking, and one disciple said to Srila Prabhupada that one member of the Gaudiya Math, it wasn't actually one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, it was a disciple of one of his godbrothers, who probably takes the prize for being the most envious of Srila Prabhupada, on and on and on throughout his whole life. He's still alive. So he's not mentioned in that conversation, but he's quoted as saying that, one member of the Gaudiya Math was saying that if Lord Chaitanya had wanted to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, he would have done so personally. In other words, saying that, Prabhupada, who they'd never called Prabhupada, was doing something wrong by preaching Krishna consciousness in the Western world. Srila Prabhupada replied that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not personally spread Krishna consciousness all over the world because he wanted to give the credit to me. We just heard also, Nimintavatram Bhavasavyasachin. Krishna told Arjuna, "You be the instrument. I'm doing it. I'm killing all these soldiers here, but you be the instrument." So Srila Prabhupada, we can understand, he's a Shaktyaveshavata, empowered by Krishna. Kali Kali Yuga Dharma Nama Sankirtan Krishna Shakti Vina Nahe Tar Pravartan. In this age of Kali, the Yuga Dharma is Nama Sankirtan, but that cannot be established without being empowered by Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada was empowered in making people Krishna conscious and spreading the chanting of the holy name of Krishna. This is not the work of any ordinary person. It's extraordinary. It was unimaginable in India that Westerners could be devotees, sadhus, brahmanas, sannyasis, gurus, and there was a lot of protest against that. I personally experienced that in the 1970s when I first went to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission in India, that people say, "You cannot be a Hindu." Thank you very much. You have to be born a Hindu. That's gone away now, to mostly. Still there's some of that. So Srila Prabhupada is not a conditioned soul like us. He, throughout his life, he was always Krishna conscious. Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada asking, it'd be interesting to see what the letter was, but seemed to be asking about Srila Prabhupada's previous life, before coming to the West, and in a somewhat probing way. And Srila Prabhupada said that, I should have got the quote here, that although I had immense opportunity, because I was born in an aristocratic family, I had immense opportunity for breaking the regulated principles, but Krishna protected me from that. And there was never any time in my life when I was not conscious of Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada is clearly very different from almost all of his disciples in that regard. He's a fully Krishna conscious. And of course Srila Prabhupada was not unique in being fully Krishna conscious. But he was unique in his overwhelming desire to communicate that to others and his effectiveness in communicating that to others. So we accept him as a Shakti Avesha Avatar, Nitya Siddha, Mahabhagavat, Paramahamsa, pure devotee of Krishna. So what is it that's so attractive about Srila Prabhupada? We're supposed to start the Guru Puja and Pushpanjali at 12. Is that all set up? Yeah, okay, let me know. To me, what is most important about Srila Prabhupada, what attracts me the most, or what inspires me the most, from the beginning and up to the present time? Well, I must admit, in the beginning I found prasadam very attractive also. Although in those days at Bhaktivedanta Mana, the attractive prasadam, especially attractive prasadam, only came once a week. And we were out on Sankirtan mostly. So. But his message, this is the most important thing to me, and it was to Srila Prabhupada also. Srila Prabhupada, he didn't emphasize that I have come to smile at you, I have come to show some magical feats, I have come to establish a relationship with you, something like a father. So all these different things may be attractive, but as Srila Prabhupada repeatedly pointed out, the duty of a guru is to give the message of the absolute truth. His message is presented primarily in his books. He always gave most emphasis to his instructions in his books, also in his letters and his recorded spoken words. What is that message? Well, then we can go on for yugas speaking about that also, but the essence of that is that God is a fact. As Srila Prabhupada, when he arrived in London, one newspaper reporter, as mostly they tend to be, newspaper reporters, when they interview people, they tend to be somewhat nasty and challenging, whoever they're dealing with. And so one reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, why have you come to London? What are you doing here? What business have you got here? And Prabhupada said that, I've come to teach you what you have forgotten, God. So Srila Prabhupada emphasized that there is God. The East Village Other, a magazine of the Lower East Side of New York City, gave a report about Srila Prabhupada in which it's stated, I'm paraphrasing, that Swami Bhaktivedanta is teaching that God is still alive. That's in response to Nietzsche's God is dead. God is alive, but he's probably not in the churches. And most important, God is a person. When a poem that Srila Prabhupada had composed as an offering to his Guru Maharaj on his Vyasa Puja Day was read or shown to his Guru Maharaj, to Srila Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, one stanza in particular very much pleased Srila Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur, that Srila Prabhupada had written, "Absolute is sentient, thou hast proved, impersonal calamity thou hast removed." Srila Prabhupada composed his own pranam mantra because his disciples they had no idea that there should be such a thing as a pranam mantra, let alone be able to compose one. In that, he stated that his mission is as being a servant of his own guru, preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, nirvishesha shunyavadi paschatya deshachane, delivering the Western countries from impersonalism and voidism. That very much appealed to me because I was sick of this treacly pseudo-spiritualism in which it always comes to everything is all one. Horrible. So, that God is a person, he's a specific person, not some vague person. We can know him. He's an attractive person, all attractive. He's not this. The nasty person conceived of in Abrahamic religions, who Richard Dawkins gets a lot of mileage out of by making the point that the God of the Old Testament is the biggest jerk imaginable. But Krishna is actually the sweetest, most loving person. There's definition for God. It's not just a user-defined entity that, well, God, again, these neo-Mayavadis, that, well, God is to you whatever you want him to be. Well, that may be true to some extent, because Krishna reveals himself differently to everyone, but it's not that you can imagine anything or anyone to be God. He has specific characteristics, full opulence, aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya, in whom there is full power, fame, yashasya, shriya, beauty, in whom there is full knowledge, in whom there is full renunciation. That person is God. So it's not just God and then you just imagine something. Specific characteristics. He's all attractive, all powerful, omniscient, eternal, unlimited, cosmic creator, and much more. So it was Srila Prabhupada was most insistent on this point. This is the core of his message, that there is God, there is the Supreme Controller. He's a specific person. That specific person is Krishna, and we are all his servants. Therefore, we should serve him. So that is the essence of his message, and encapsulated in the Hare Krishna mantra. He gave the Hare Krishna mantra. Everything is there in the Hare Krishna mantra. So I don't know if... Wait, I'm... Okay, I'll go on because I'm getting into another section now, just having touched the essence of Srila Prabhupada's message. Srila Prabhupada came to America about which, see if I can, I'll get back to that later, came to America and immediately he didn't attract anyone to be his follower. Of course, he wasn't really trying to attract anyone to be his follower. He was attracting people to the all-attractive Krishna. And that they were his followers was incidental. Srila Prabhupada wasn't trying to make followers. He made so many followers, but he wanted to make devotees. He wanted to awaken people to be devotees of Krishna. In that sense, he was different to every other guru who came to the West, who wanted to make followers for themselves. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to make the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He didn't make the International Society for Bhaktivedanta Swami Consciousness. He didn't name his society after himself. He, although he accepted a high level of worship from his disciples, as is fit, as in the tradition, he didn't make himself famous. There are many, although the Hare Krishna movement is very well known, considering the number of followers not being so many, it's very well known. But its founder is hardly known, even in India. Still, Prabhupada is not so very well known. Whereas we find others, they became very well known. When Srila Prabhupada was preaching in America, at that time this Maharshi Yogesh, whatever his name is, that Maharishi, something like that. Mahesh Yogi, yeah. So he was well known, and there was this total rascal that Guru Maharaji, they called him, who some fat, ugly young boy from Himachal Pradesh, I think, who called himself Krishna. He was very well known. And there are others. Before him had come this Yogananda. In Bengal, people think that Vivekananda is well known in America, but he's not at all. So Yogananda was somewhat known, but these two are very well known. And there are others, Chinmay Mission, his mission was named after himself, and so on. So, Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't out to make followers, but he wanted to make or bring people to Krishna consciousness, which required that they be his followers. But that was not his motive. That's an important distinction to make. He made followers, but that was not his motive. But the American people didn't find Prabhupada attractive. Later we find Sali Agarwal, in whose house he stayed. He also stayed in the house of Brij Mohan. No, what was the name of the husband? I can't remember. The boy's name was Brij. Maybe it was Brij Mohan. He never seems to speak. He's in the background, but we see Gopal Agarwal, and the boy's name was Brij Mohan. So she's effusive about Srila Prabhupada, but she didn't become his follower. She appreciated Srila Prabhupada very much, but she didn't take up his message. So the American people didn't find Srila Prabhupada attractive. Eventually some American youth unexpectedly found Srila Prabhupada attractive. It appears that Srila Prabhupada expected that the more intellectual class would take up his message. If we see the books, the first canto, which he brought to America, it's appears to be aimed particularly at the leaders, the intellectuals and the political leaders, but those weren't the people who took up his message. But in the beginning, the American youth who did find Prabhupada attractive, it wasn't initially because he reminded them of Krishna, because they didn't know anything about Krishna, and they became attracted to him, and he gradually taught them about Krishna. Indian people might have appreciated, Hindus might have appreciated Srila Prabhupada because he's a devotee of Krishna and he was a Paka Sadhu. He was a real sadhu. He wasn't indulging in hanky-panky with the girls. He rise early, bathe, he stuck to his sadhu dress. He was clearly a bona fide sadhu. There are many such bona fide sadhus in India, but the people of America had no appreciation for that. They might find it something odd, but that they wouldn't respect him for that, as an Indian, a pious Indian would. They just didn't know anything about Krishna or Vedic culture, so that wasn't what attracted them to Srila Prabhupada. It would seem that a major attraction of Srila Prabhupada to the hippie youth was that he was so different from anyone they knew, because the hippies were all trying to be different to the straight society in which people get up early in the morning and go to work and they dress in a suit and they just believe everything that the media tells them. So the hippies were trying to be different, but they were all trying to be different in the same way. So they all ended up just being another class. They long hair, beads, and flowing bright robes, and flowers in your hair if you ever go to San Francisco. Different kind of music. They're all trying to be different, but they pretty soon ran out of ways to be different. They all ended up being different in the same way. But Srila Prabhupada was completely different from them and from the straight society. But they could understand that Srila Prabhupada was different. Well, they did have something in common. They both were not fans of the general American way of life that they had in common. But then Srila Prabhupada was also very disparaging about the hippie way of life. He disliked the hippie way of life more than the straight, in some ways, more than the straight American way of life. He would speak about respectable gentlemen, and he would disparage the hippies. And it wasn't that he was out to attract the hippies by joining them in being against straight society. He shocked many of them by say he wasn't against the Vietnam War per se, which they that really. But anyway. Even when Srila Prabhupada's disciples, later when they sat down and wrote books about him, just like Satsarup Maharaj did and Hayagriva and so many did, about the early days, Gurudas Prabhu has written about the early days, Mukunda Maharaj, they've written about Jadurani, they've written about those early days when Srila Prabhupada didn't have followers and he gradually attracted some followers. But it's very difficult to pin down for themselves or for their readers to pin down what exactly it was that was so attractive and so special about him that he changed people's lives. Clearly he was not of this world. He was so different from everyone else because he wasn't of this world at all. Although he was very practical person in many ways in dealing with this world, much more practical than the hippies were. But he was not of this world. The PhD scholar missed this point completely. He was analyzing how Prabhupada he would read people's minds and things like that, or appear to read their minds. He wouldn't say that, but it wasn't that. Ultimately, it was Srila Prabhupada's powerful, pure devotion and his completely compassionate desire to communicate that to others that appealed to persons who were open enough and receptive enough to accept that mercy that Srila Prabhupada has given. So, shall we stop now? Okay. One of the volumes of Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita was titled Only He Could Lead Them. That's an astonishing feat of Srila Prabhupada. The hippies who took the American ideal of individualism, the rugged individual, they wanted to take it to the maximum extent, and everyone should, the idea of a hippie is everyone should be completely individualistic, and they don't accept any authority. The hippies were into this. We don't accept any authority. We defy the police. We're not going to go and work in a job because we won't accept any authority over us in any and no organized religion in which the religion tells you that it's like this and you have to do that. No, they don't want any of that. They want to avoid all of authority. But Srila Prabhupada, even without their realizing it, he exhibited or he gave authority over them because of why exactly? Well, it's very difficult to say, but they submitted themselves to him, understanding that by doing so they would be benefited, and that their game of being independent wasn't getting them anywhere. That their so-called independence, they just brought them misery, dissatisfaction. Although the hippies were supposed to be pursuing enlightenment, they didn't find enlightenment. As Jayadvaita Maharaj says, the real hippies joined the Hare Krishna movement, those who are serious about enlightenment. Otherwise, the hippie dream, it just lasted a short time, maybe 2 or 3 years, and then the center of it, that Haight-Ashbury area in San Francisco, just descended into commercialism, the whole hippie experience. Ironically, the whole hippie endeavor that we're all living as brothers and sisters, it just descended into commercialism. That the people saw an opportunity to make money out of selling kaftans and illicit illegal drugs, and the rock groups, or just like the Beatles, they sung that I don't care too much for money, but well, practically they didn't neglect it. It wasn't that they threw their money in the streets like Jains do when they take sannyas. So the whole hippie ideal broke down, and people individually, they found they weren't getting what they had hoped for, the dream of flower power, and we're making a new world where imagine all the people living for today, all this kind of thing. But it just degraded. There's a reason for that, which I'll get back to later. So Srila Prabhupada commanded a natural kind of authority. He was very careful in how in the beginning, he didn't tell people, now you have to follow me, do what I say. But he elicited, that's the word I wanted to use, he elicited such a response when he spoke with the authority of Shastra and tradition and conviction born of actual experience of Krishna. And that was very impressive. Who became his disciples? Those who listened to him. Many came to join the kirtan. And then when philosophy began, most of them would leave, a phenomenon which we see up to the present day, and which is why I also, as an aside, have some skepticism or reservations about the kirtan melas, which have become part of ISKCON life, in which anyone whether they're following or not following, they can come and do kirtan for 24 hours or whatever, and no one will ever say anything about what we're supposed to do when the kirtan stops. And so it's okay, you can do whatever you like, but just do kirtan. Anyway, that's just one of my many peeves, having a little expression here. The attractiveness of Srila Prabhupada, some facets of that. Srila Prabhupada, he surprised people. He was so different that he elicited surprise just to see him. Even in New York City at that time, to find someone wandering around the streets in a style of dress that was at that time unknown, dressed in cloth that was, if you look closely enough, people wouldn't, but it might make a subliminal, to use that Freudian term, impression, or is it Jungian? Subliminal impression on them, that the colors of Srila Prabhupada's clothes were also completely different. They wouldn't be completely even, just like your cloth is completely evenly colored in that, what I call Salem yellow. Looks like the Thai Buddhist monks. But because he used rock dye, that's one kind of stone which is found in certain parts of India, you wash your cloth with it and it makes the cloth red. But it comes out somewhat blotchy. So it wasn't exactly this tie and dye. It wasn't exactly like that. So that was unusual. And Srila Prabhupada's shoes were unusual. Not in India. They were the plastic, pointy kind of slippers. The plastic version of the kind of shoes which are associated with the Muslim rulers, ex-rulers, with that little point there. So, and Srila Prabhupada, looking unusual, the shaved head and a shikha, and he would walking completely confidently in the streets of New York, as if he owned the place. If you see the way Srila Prabhupada walks, he walks with such confidence, as if he owns the place, because he knows he's in the protection of Krishna. So, very unusual. His speech, you start to speak to him, his speech is unusual. His accent is difficult to understand. His style of English is difficult to understand. When I joined the movement, when I was mercifully accepted in this movement, it took me all the time in the temples, in the Sankirtan vans, there'd be Srila Prabhupada, we'd have Srila Prabhupada's lecture tapes playing all the time. After 1 month, I could begin to understand them because his English, his accent was so different and the terms he used. So his speech, his mannerisms. So all of it was unusual to everyone. So that was somewhat surprising, but that wasn't what made people Krishna conscious. His complete conviction, his whole way of life, when people came to know about his way of life, they would definitely be impressed by that. Even the hippies couldn't imagine someone rising so early. I myself, among many others, had this experience that when providentially, by the mercy of Krishna, when I first visited Bhaktivedanta Manor, I didn't intend to stay overnight, but various circumstances forced me to stay overnight. And although staying up overnight till 4 o'clock was not unknown to me, going to sleep before that and getting up at 4 o'clock was completely unknown to me. And that Srila Prabhupada did that every day, and that he was living among the hippies. He was quite happy. Actually, he was living in the Bowery at that time among the winos and the practically the worst people possible in America in many ways. But Srila Prabhupada maintained his own dress, his own diet, his own outlook. And for the hippies, and for any average American, his morality was something extraordinary. No meat eating. Most of the hippies at that time were still meat eaters. No meat, no fish, no eggs, no onions, no garlic. Nothing worth living for. Are we going to have the Pushpanjali now? Okay, so I'll plan to continue this later. Maybe not today, maybe tomorrow. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.